Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Senate hearings kicking off today for Donald Trump's cabinet nominees, Jeff Sessions, then seven more this week. There will be questions about how each would lead. But behind those questions, questions about ethics and potential conflicts of interest that go all the way to the Oval Office. This hour, On Point, ethics and the incoming Trump administration. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. It's always a rush to Inauguration Day. Is the Trump transition being transparent enough about potential conflicts of interest and their solutions? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is Russell Berman, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic. Russell, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So we saw flares go up last week from the Government Ethics Office saying, we don't have what we need. People are not filing. They're not filing in time or not at all. And it's putting too much pressure on us. We don't have time to adequately look at the ethics and conflict of interest issues around the cabinet nominees. How has that sorted itself out, Russell, or has it?
Well, it hasn't really. There's a lot of back and forth between Republicans and Democrats in the Senate over the confirmation schedule for these nominees. Republicans want to get as many Trump nominees in place by Inauguration Day as they can, but Democrats don't want to rush the process.
Everybody wants to have their cabinet in place by Inauguration Day or as much of it as they can. Is there something unusual about the timing of what's been offered here, or is it about, are there just more millionaires and billionaires on this cabinet with more to report than we've seen in previous administrations?
Well, it's a little bit of both. There are more millionaires and billionaires in this cabinet than in recent history, but the Trump administration also got started quite late. They didn't pre-vet many of these picks, and it's coming back to haunt them right now because the Democrats are sort of vowing to delay votes until the ethics office has been able to properly vet them.
Maybe they'll be able to delay votes. They're certainly not really delaying hearings. Maybe a little. A CIA Pompeo put off from Wednesday. Wednesday was going to be this giant crush. We've got Jeff Sessions today. The CIA nominee, director, put off until Thursday. Betsy DeVos for education put off until next week. But most of this going ahead, in spite of the fact that you've had plenty of criticism from Democrats. Here was Senator Patrick Leahy, Vermont, talking with WBUR's Morning Edition. Said hearings for the Trump cabinet nominees should be postponed until those questions are answered.
We have a whole lot of the president-elect's nominees that have not filled out their ethics disclosures. I can never remember a time when anybody was voted on for a cabinet position who hadn't completed their ethics report. And certainly nobody should be allowed to vote until that's done.
But Mitch McConnell on Face the Nation on Sunday, Senate Majority Leader, of course, said he expects the confirmation hearings will go ahead on schedule. It's a grow up out there.
We confirmed seven cabinet appointments the day President Obama was sworn in. We didn't like most of them either, but he won the election. So all of these little procedural complaints are related to their frustration. It having not only lost the White House, but having lost the Senate. I understand that, but we need to sort of grow up here and get past that.
Grow up and get past it. Russell Berman, on the ethics front, at this point, who appears to be most compliant with the precedent here, and who is not really reporting much yet? I mean, I see Rex Tillerson, who's up, of course, for Secretary of State, the ExxonMobil CEO, seems to have been pretty thorough in his compliance with precedent and transparency.
Right. He's ahead of many of the other appointees. Democrats have not talked about delaying the vote for his confirmation. The question for him, of course, is going to be political and whether he can get enough votes from Republicans to get confirmed. The Democrats had been very concerned about Betsy DeVos and are still concerned about Betsy DeVos, the nominee for Education Secretary, because she's a very wealthy woman, a conservative activist from Michigan, and she did not have and she still does not have her ethics agreement in place. And Republicans had scheduled her hearing for this coming Wednesday. But late on Monday night, they agreed with Democrats to delay that hearing by 6 days. That will likely mean that she will not be confirmed by Inauguration Day, but it does give the Office of Government Ethics some more time to complete that report.
Betsy DeVos, heir to a fortune from the Amway, which her father founded. What's in those ethics requirement, the ethics report or review? I mean, is this like filing taxes? Is it that kind of detail? Or what's in there, Russell? What do they ask?
Well, right. In many cases, it's much more detailed than filing your taxes. You really have to give all of the financial information, not just for recent years, but for most of your adult life. And so what the ethics office will work with you to determine what poses a potential conflict of interest once you take office. And that's obviously to protect the public from having officials who are not acting solely in the public interest. But it also protects the nominee and the potential cabinet secretary from putting themselves in legal jeopardy if they haven't, let's say you're Rex Tillerson and you haven't divested from ExxonMobil before you become Secretary of State, then you have to take actions because Exxon is a global international company. You have to take actions that might benefit or hurt ExxonMobil. And if you haven't totally separated yourself from the company, then a prosecutor could bring charges against you for violating federal law. And so the ethics agreements are in part to protect you as the secretary from that. And so for DeVos, they just simply haven't gotten hers done. She obviously has a very vast and complicated financial portfolio given her wealth. And so the Office of Government Ethics hasn't specified exactly what she needs. They basically do not comment on individual nominees until they've completed the report, and then they release the agreement to the public and to the Senate.
And I should correct that fortune through her husband, Dick DeVos, heir to the Amway fortune. And, of course, reports of, I mean, if you get enough money and you're active in a certain area, you can have all kinds of potential conflicts of interest. Reports of indirect investments there in that fortune in student loan companies, for example. And if she's education secretary, you can see how that would get sticky in a hurry. Russell Berman, please stand by there in New York. Joining us now from Washington is Norman Eisen, fellow at the Brookings Institute. He was special counsel for ethics and government reform in the White House under the Obama administration. We have spoken with his counterpart from the George W. Bush administration, Richard Painter. Norman Eisen was ambassador to the Czech Republic for 3 or 4 years not long ago. Joins us today from Washington. Norman Eisen, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Very happy to be here.
So we saw all these alarm bells going off late last week. Does it look like things are back on track in terms of an orderly review of potential conflicts of interest in the cabinet? And then what about beyond the cabinet, going right up to the White House?
They're not back on track. The Trump administration, including the cabinet's failures to provide their ethics disclosures, is in ethics crisis. Its problem starts with the tone that's been set at the top by Donald Trump in denying that he has to comply with the law, falsely stating that the ethics laws don't apply to him. And it's trickled down to these nominees' contemptuous treatment of the system. In the Obama transition, which I worked on at this point, we had provided every single cabinet nominee ethics package to the committees at least 3 days in advance of hearing.
Was this 08 or 2012, Norm Eisen?
2008.
Okay, 2008. So right at the beginning, when he, like Donald Trump, had not – it was not like he was already there and had plenty of time to plan it out. He was also in the heat of an election campaign.
Exactly, but we pre-vetted. We put the materials together, and we gave them to the committees at least 3 days in advance of the hearing. In many cases, we did 5 days or even a week. And it's critical that occur. It still hasn't happened for all the nominees. Myself and my bipartisan colleague, and this is a bipartisan issue, the Bush administration ethics advisor, Professor Painter, wrote this week in The Guardian that the hearing should be postponed. So we were gratified to see, for example, that the DeVos hearing was postponed yesterday. But there's still too many of these nominees who don't have ethics paperwork up there. And without that, we don't know what their conflicts are or how they're going to deal with it. I think they're taking a cue from the man at the top, and it's not a good one.
We had Chuck Schumer, New York Democratic senator, he was talking with Rachel Maddow recently and saying, look, you can't just bang this through. Here he was.
There are so many contradictions in this administration. I mean, one, we're going after their nominees. You know, McConnell wanted to let all of them just get through in these quick little two-hour hearings, get all of them done in 2 weeks. We're saying no way.
Well, it's going right ahead. And, of course, cabinet nominee hearings are always kind of in a rush because Inauguration Day comes inexorably. But is there an issue here? Reince Priebus, who's coming in as Donald Trump once as his chief of staff, said, hey, there's enough info out there.
The fact is, there's no reason. I mean, it's the first week of January. They have all the details that they need. They have all the information that they need. There's no different from any other new administration coming in. And the American people demand it.
On Fox News Sunday, do we have all the information we need, Norman Eisen?
No, we do not have all the information we need. And I think it's outrageous that Mitch McConnell is pushing these nominees through when he himself wrote, I pulled this letter out of my files and I tweeted it out over the weekend. And it's now been retweeted over a million times engaged with over a million times, I should say, on Twitter. Mitch McConnell wrote us when I was working for the president in the White House. He wrote Harry Reid and he said there should be no hearings unless we have the complete ethics package so we can know the conflicts and how they're going to be dealt with. Chuck Schumer took that same letter and he just changed the address and sent it back to Mitch McConnell, and that was the right thing to do.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about ethics and the incoming Trump administration, from cabinet nominees to the White House to the president-elect himself. Potential conflicts of interest and how or whether they are being resolved. Russell Berman is with us. He's a senior associate editor at The Atlantic, been following all this. Ambassador Norman Eisen is with us. He is a fellow at the Brookings Institute, was the special counsel for ethics and government reform in the White House in the Obama administration for a couple of years. He's been working with his counterpart from the Bush administration, Richard Painter, to put a bright light on what's going on here. You can join us this hour. Have you heard all the questions about ethics, transparency, and the millionaires and billionaires headed onto the cabinet, into the Oval Office? What's your level of concern on this front? A little? A lot? Is it strange, offensive to you that some of these cabinet nominees aren't submitting to review before their hearings, or did not appear to have? Now, we'll see what happens by the time the hearings actually take place. Democrats saying, look, let's play it by the book. Republicans saying, this is just sour grapes. You've got all that you need. Here was Democratic Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey on Face the Nation on CBS on Sunday, calling for more information ahead of hearings.
These people that Donald Trump has put up as his appointment to his cabinet are not like President Obama's people. These are people who are billionaires and have vast holdings, vast wealth. And the American people have a right to know if they're going to be entering into those offices with conflicts of interest.
But Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas saying, look, this is delay for delay's sake.
Delaying for delay's sake out of partisan pique really doesn't do anything to accomplish any goal, but rather makes our country more dangerous and denies the president-elect the cabinet that he has chosen.
Norman Eisen, it is always a rush, isn't it? And now we have, I mean, and it's not unusual to have wealthy people in the cabinet. There may be more in this one, but it's not the first time. Look at Hank Paulson, who was there in the cabinet. Is it that you know, unusual to have difficulty sorting all this out before confirmation?
Well, there's a big difference between a rush and a train wreck. And this is the latter. When you speed through red lights, you get head-on collisions. That's what we have here. This is totally unprecedented. Our practice was to get all these nominees' ethics packages in advance of the hearing. You must have them, particularly where you have individuals with these terribly vast fortunes and so complicated ethics problems. Senators and through them the American people have to be able to ask about that. You have Betsy DeVos, whose hearing thankfully has been postponed.
Till next week.
She has direct and indirect investments in student loan and other companies that will be affected by the Department of Education. You have Wilbur Ross with his long entanglements with the steel industry. Well, he's going to have to deal with that when he's at the Department of Commerce. So there's a series of these issues. There's a right and a wrong way. Some of the nominees are doing things the right way. Mr. Tillerson, Secretary of State, he got his ethics paperwork in on time and he attempted to deal with all the conflicts and the rules in the proposals he submitted. The problem is that the man at the top, Donald Trump, is so far not doing things the right way, and that bad tone is spreading to too many of his nominees.
Russell Berman, tomorrow Donald Trump holds what he's calling a news conference, not a press conference. I guess he'll make news is the idea. But where does he stand on dealing with his own business empire in terms of resolving conflicts of interest? There was a lot of pressure back in December. He said, I'll talk about it in January. Here we are. Do we know what's expected tomorrow?
No, we don't. You know, he's said very little other than in these short clipped tweets for the most part. That's how he's communicated with the public in the last 6 weeks. He said he's not going to do any more deals. He's going to separate himself from his business. His two of his children are going to run the business. But he's not completely divesting. He's not creating, total independence or essentially liquidating his holdings and his company. We don't expect to hear that he's going to do that tomorrow. I think the big question about the news conference on Wednesday is how much detail is he and is his transition team going to provide about what he plans on doing. As we've discussed, his cabinet nominees have to provide a lot of detail through these ethics agreements and financial disclosure reports about what they have and about what they're going to do. And it's not clear that, you know, no matter what he does, that the president-elect is going to provide that much detail about his plans for resolving the many potential conflicts of interest that he will have come January 20th.
Russell Berman, Norman Eisen, please stand by. David French joins us in just a moment here. A couple calls first. Chuck in Charlotte, North Carolina. Chuck, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, I appreciate that. I just have a couple quick comments. I don't think the left fully gets, nor does the right actually, why Donald Trump won. He won because people are tired of people using all of this stuff to better their parties. What I mean by that is this gentleman comes on, and I'm sure he's very learned in what he does, but he's so concerned about one aspect of it, and then Mitch McConnell gets up and says, hey, we don't need to do that. We've done enough, which is against the law. So then you look back and you say, well, not 2, 3, 4 months ago, Hillary Clinton's staff did the same exact thing. They snubbed their nose at Congress when they were supposed to go in and speak. That's what I'm...
I want to clarify. Are you saying, do you want a full accounting in advance of these hearings?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It should be a full accounting to the American public. But see, what we're doing is we're focusing on this one aspect of it instead of everything.
Well, we're going to have the hearings, and as the hearings unfold, we will do our best to be on top of them. We talked about Jeff Sessions already yesterday, and of course, we'll follow the other hearings just as well as we can, though they're really stacked up here. What about in your own working life, Chuck? Are you accustomed to a situation in which you're required to be clear about, you know, what conflict of interest might be there?
This way, I served in the U.S. Navy, and I also was a Charlotte police officer. And in both aspects, I was cleared and vetted thoroughly. And that's what I'm trying to say. There's no reason in the world why the left should use one part to further their agenda, while the right uses another to further their agenda. That's the reason Donald Trump won. Nobody seems to understand that. He's the only candidate that came out and said, we're going to change something. The rest of
Yeah, but Chuck, we've got everybody telling us today that he himself, I mean, he still hasn't put his tax returns out there, and he still hasn't explained to the American people how he himself is going to avoid really thorough conflict of interest.
That's right. That's the point. Everybody's doing exactly what is business as usual, and that's using the American public's confidence and everything else for their own benefit.
Chuck, we got it, and I appreciate your call from Charlotte. I appreciate it very much. Let me get one more right here. Gina. Gina, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I think that they need to hold things off until these people can be cleared of any conflict of interest. And that would, in my opinion, should have been all the way to the top. And if there are any conflicts of interest or any question, then they need to be clarified first.
We don't have like a year and a day to Inauguration Day. It's next week, so it needs to go pretty quick here.
Well, then his nominees should be cleared and should be vetted, but they need to make sure the conflicts of interest are dealt with. And if they do have a conflict of interest, then someone else should get the position.
Mm-hmm.
We as the we are the people, and they are supposed to be helping us, not pillaging everything they possibly can and taking advantage of us.
Gina, we've got it loud and clear, and I appreciate your call as well. Norman Eisen, Russell Berman, please stand by. David French joins us right now from Columbia, Tennessee. He joins us via Skype. He's a staff writer at the National Review. David French, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me.
You're watching all this, and I don't know where you stand these days. You were you're conservative and Republican, but weren't exactly a Trump fan. You yourself were put forward as a potential presidential option at one point in the election season. As you watch all this concern about ethics, does it look partisan to you, or does it look credible, legitimate to you?
Well, I think that you have to separate out who we're talking about. If you're talking about the conflicts of interest that are applicable to Donald Trump and whether Donald Trump has been sufficiently transparent about conflicts of interest, I have great concern about that. He has far-flung business interests, as we all know. He's not been terribly forthcoming about the disposition of those business interests. And if there's one thing that we know about Donald Trump is that Donald Trump cares an awful lot about his business brand. In fact, during the campaign, about the truly predictable way to get under his skin would be to attack his brand. If you attack his brand, Donald Trump gets very, very, very angry. And so I think it's very much in all of our interests to know what are his plans regarding his far-flung business empire, because, not just because it's the right thing to do, but also because of his own personality, his own demonstrated past practices.
But what's his brand now, David? I mean, he's president of the United States. Surely there's not anything bigger than that once he's in that job, or is there?
Well, you would think not, but I mean, remember, this is a guy who during the campaign was so consumed with his past business dealings that he would at a public event pulled out Trump water, Trump steaks, Trump magazine to show that these things still exist and they're still high quality. He has an obsession with his brand that I think is a little bit different from other people. I understand it to an extent. I mean, his brand is the source of his wealth and influence. So, but all that just is to say, when it comes to Trump, yeah, we need more information and we need it sooner rather than later. I mean, this is just a basic part of accountability in a democracy. When it comes to his cabinet officials, I believe that the situation is improving.
Okay.
If the transition team is to be believed, and Politico reporting this morning is to be believed, that all of the nominees have submitted their paperwork to the ethics office. Right now, it's in the hands of the vetters themselves. Do I wish they'd submitted it a day or two before? Some of them rushed it in last night, for example. Sure, I think it would have been better to have this paperwork a day or two in advance. But as of right now, it looks like, again, if the transition sources are to be believed, that the paperwork's in. So I think that the crisis, there's not a crisis at the cabinet level. I'm much more concerned at the presidential level.
Norman Eisen, is this a one-time chance to check this stuff out? And if you don't do it in this handful of days before confirmation, then they're off to the races leading whatever department that they're made secretary of, and there's no more oversight?
It's the best first chance, but it's not the only chance. The reason it's the best of the early opportunities is because the senators can actually cross-examine the witnesses and ask them, as, for example, Obama nominees were cross-examined. Penny Pritzker, a person of some affluence, was asked
Big
about
fortune.
Her
yep.
ethics arrangements. She's now the Secretary of Commerce. Mm-hmm. So it's the best opportunity. It's harder to ask those questions and ask follow-up questions and study the documents afterwards. But there are other opportunities because these individuals do appear, cabinet members, for cross-examination at Senate hearings. More importantly, House also. More importantly, if these issues are not ventilated, they're going to start stubbing their toe on conflicts, the nominees, once they get in office, that they may not even know about. And then they're investigated not by the Senate, but by the FBI and the career prosecutors of the Department of Justice, because these conflicts laws are criminal laws. They have criminal penalties. Why do we need that situation? Why don't they just comply with the regular order and provide us the materials so we can understand how the whole thing is going to work? Even Jared Kushner, Mr. Trump's son-in-law, has agreed to comply with all these rules and regulations. Why can't the nominees do it and Mr. Trump himself do the same?
Jared Kushner, who's now coming in as a senior White House advisor, and I guess, Russell Berman, he's said that he will step out of his family business. So is that perfectly clear, perfectly black and white, Russell?
Well, it's not. Like, one example is he's selling the newspaper, the New York Observer, that he owns, but apparently he's giving his interest to his brother. So it's still going to be in the family. And as I understand it, there are some questions or concerns about what he plans to do. But of course, he does not go through Senate confirmation.
Right.
And one thing to keep in mind with the Senate is the difference now, as opposed to 8 years ago, is that the threshold for confirming these nominees is now only 51 votes, effectively, mm-hmm. as opposed to 60 votes because of the change that the Democrats made a few years ago in mm-hmm. the filibuster rules.
Mm-hmm.
So Democrats, their only leverage really right now is to delay the votes. They can't really stop them unless they get Republicans to defect. And so that's why – another reason why they feel it's important to make sure that they can fully ask these nominees in a public hearing about these potential conflicts.
Norman Eisen, to look at how sticky this can get, in the case of Jared Kushner, who's coming in here, and I guess 35 years old, also heir to a real estate fortune, that's grown the cornerstone of that building in Manhattan, a very big one, 666, what is it, Fifth Avenue. And we've been reading recently that there's conversations about a huge Chinese investor potentially buying that, I guess, and a company, Anbang, that's lots of reports it's tied to the Chinese government. If he gives his interest to his brother, is that adequate insulation, Norman, from potential conflict of interest?
Well, we need to evaluate the specifics. We don't yet have the specifics. It is, in many situations, permitted, depending on the details of the trust arrangement, if it's an irrevocable trust, for example, to provide it to a brother. Look, the best of all possible worlds is to make everybody turn all their possessions, their businesses, and their interests over to independent trustees or even to blind trustees. But the law does not demand that. What the law demands is reasonable arrangements, reasonable distance, balancing of public service and private interest.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we want Donald Trump to do. Your earlier caller, I felt his pain. He said Trump won because, in essence, of the hypocrisy. I want to reassure him and all the listeners that everything I do in this space, I do bipartisan with the Bush ethics advisor, Richard Painter. And we criticized Hillary Clinton during the campaign. I was quoted in an AP story that perhaps was the single press piece that upset the Clinton campaign the most relating to the foundation. So we've been critical of both parties. We simply want everyone to live up to the same rules, most of all Donald Trump.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Rocket Mortgage provides a transparent online process that helps you understand all the details of your home loan. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the right mortgage solution for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about ethics and the incoming Trump administration, from cabinet nominees to the White House to the president-elect himself. David French is with us from National Review via Skype from Columbia, Tennessee today. Russell Berman from The Atlantic has been reporting on all this. And former Ambassador Norman Eisen is with us. He served as special counsel as well for ethics and government reform in the White House under President Obama for a couple of years. He and his counterpart from the George W. Bush years have been raising a lot of noise about ethics and what's going on in the transition. You can join us this hour. Do you trust that top leaders here will put America first, keep self-interest out of it? Do you want to see steps to assure an arm's-length relationship to personal fortunes? Are Democrats being sore losers here? Are Republicans being hypocrites when they asked the same oversight before? Is it too much to ask clarity, transparency, divestment, or distance from the start of everyone right to the Oval Office? Yesterday, in the lobby of Trump Tower in New York, President-elect Donald Trump, standing alongside Alibaba Group founder Jack Ma, that's one of the richest men in China, told reporters he's confident in his cabinet nominees.
I think they'll all pass. I think every nomination will be, they're all at the highest level. Jack was even saying, I mean, they are at the absolute highest level. I think they're going to do very well.
Absolute highest level. Richest man in China. One of them agrees with me. What about his own arrangements? In early December, he said, well, that'll be fine. He'll give it over to his children. His company is, yeah.
My executives will run it with my children. It's a big company. It's a great company.
Democrats last week, this week, saying, look, we want all the cabinet members to have their material in plenty of time before the hearing so we can look at it. And when Mitch McConnell said, you know, grow up, in response to that, we had Chuck Schumer saying, well, minority leader, saying, well, reading from Mitch McConnell's own letter from prior transition periods.
Financial disclosure statements and applicable tax returns for applicable committees are complete and submitted to the committee for review prior to a hearing being noticed.
That was good enough then? Good enough for the goose? What about the gander? Molly in Tampa, Florida. Molly, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Just have a comment. So Trump ran on the basis of draining the swamp, but this sort of seems like business as usual with his cabinet and Oval Office members. I really don't think that he has a vested interest in the American public, especially the middle-class Americans that elected him. I think he's more concerned with his own wealth and surrounding himself with wealthy individuals. And this is what so many Trump supporters took issue with Hillary Clinton, and accusing her of having a vested interest in Wall Street.
But once he's in, you think he's really going to pursue personal wealth? You know, he's already, we're told, a billionaire. It's dangerous to do that from the Oval Office. Wouldn't it be, Molly? I mean, wouldn't he risk
right.
being...
I think that if there weren't something to hide, then why hasn't he released his tax statements? And why is he surrounding himself with these individuals that are similar to what we've seen in the past with these cabinet members? And this isn't draining the swamp. This isn't filling this cabinet or Oval Office with people that are different.
Well, I appreciate your call, and I get the perspective. Let me get one more right here. Colleen in Rockport, Massachusetts. Colleen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say, I'm going to pull over. I just wanted to say that I want to support this new president. I want to give him a chance, but he keeps doing things that say he's not going to. My question is, I've been in business for years. If I were interviewing someone and they didn't want to follow the rules, they wouldn't make it through the interview process very, they wouldn't get very far. I want to know why we're letting them, these businessmen, get away with not following the rules.
Well, in fairness, we know that some of them are. Rex Tillerson, by all accounts, he's really distanced himself from that fortune. He's gotten out of a lot of the stock and so on, and he's reported everything, and other reports coming in now. I mean,
well, that's great. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but no, I know time is short.
Yeah,
that's great. I love that, but that's exactly what they should be doing. We shouldn't be applauding
for everybody.
That.
Yeah,
I'm talking about our soon-to-be president. And anybody else who isn't following the rules and doesn't want to show us what they're doing in their business dealings.
It is pretty crazy that we still haven't seen those tax returns. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing. We've got the inauguration day right in front of us right now. David French, there's this news conference scheduled for tomorrow by Donald Trump, the first in 160, 70, whatever days. What would you like to hear from him tomorrow? If he speaks to his business interests and his, you know, heading for the presidency, what would put you at ease, David?
Well, you know, for me, I don't think it's really anything that he would say. It would be, what can I see? Not what I hear, what I see. In other words, let's see the details. Let's see the details of what he's going to do with his business empire. He's already, you know, he's already said some things that sound good about handing over control to others. And that would seem to make sense, as you pointed out, that why wouldn't he hand over control to others? I mean, he's going to be president of the United States. There's an enormous political downside in him not divesting. But, you know, we just need to see the details. And it's not too much to ask to see the details on how he's going to divest from his business interests, especially given his the extent to which, as I said earlier, the extent to which he's obviously deeply emotionally invested in his brand. It has a hold over him. And it had a hold over him during the primary campaign that seemed unusual to me. And so we need to see details. But one other thing on these cabinet officials, again, as I said, it looks like they have submitted their paperwork.
Yep.
At least that's what the transition is saying. So that is that eases a lot of concerns, I believe.
That's good. People might have wanted it in a more timely fashion. But if it's in, that's good. Norman Eisen, tomorrow with President-elect Trump, if he speaks to this, what would it take to your seasoned eye here? I mean, after all, you were right there in the White House as the special counsel on this ethics front. What would it take for him to satisfy you as to putting his business interests at arm's length or beyond? And is it doable with a business empire as sprawling as his?
It is doable, and it would take the same thing that every president has done for four decades, and it's simple. Donald Trump needs to make a clean break from his operations and management and ownership interests by turning his businesses over to an independent professional trustee, not a family member. Simple signature on a page. Trustee, you take it all. Sell it as quickly as you can. Divest. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. It's your problem. Every president has used a blind trust or the equivalent since the Ethics in Government Act was passed, codifying those trusts. They're not legally required for presidents generally. Here they are because Donald Trump is getting foreign government payments in his businesses around the world, including in the United States. That's forbidden by the Constitution. He has to make a break. Other presidents weren't required to do it. They did it anyhow. So should Donald Trump.
Russell Berman, do you see any sign that that's coming, that kind of clean break? We haven't heard that talk from Donald Trump.
Not at all. I think that would be the big news and the big surprise if he were to not only announce that tomorrow, but that, you know, the information provided by his transition team backed that up. But as you said, we have no indication that he's doing that. He has publicly resisted that. You know, saying at various points that the public knew that he was a wealthy businessman, that he had these interests when they voted for him. That was all out in the public. And so I think he's going to try to separate, sort of do the minimum required to separate to get beyond this issue. But you know, as you know, Norman Eisen said, if he doesn't completely separate, this could be a recurring issue throughout his administration as he makes announcements, as his agencies you know, do policies. How are his business interests going to be affected, and are we confident that they were not you know, made with those business interests at all in mind?
David French, you're a Republican. You've got there's a Republican majority on Capitol Hill now, both houses. Do you expect Republicans to be tough on this issue with President Trump once he's in office, or sort of, you know, I don't know, roll over?
For the time being, I would expect them. I think in the short term, I'm expecting them to roll over when it comes to Donald Trump. I don't think there's a great precedent so far in the last 18 months of the Republican Party standing up to some of Donald Trump's excesses. There are individuals certainly within the Republican Party who won't roll over. There are individuals who will hold his feet to the fire. And I think that that's important. But I think it's going to be very important for Republicans to realize that this can and will, if they're abandoning principle and they're just thinking about partisan advantage, it's going to be very important for them to realize that this is something that can come back and bite them. I mean, this is conflicts of interest and controversies surrounding the Clinton Foundation are one of the things that torpedoed Hillary Clinton's run for the White House. So far, Donald Trump has been relatively immune to the same kinds of controversies, and not that he doesn't do things that are controversial, that he's been immune from the consequences of these controversies. But no president is permanently immune. People eventually get scandal fatigue. They eventually get tired of it all. And it would behoove the Republicans to remember that sooner rather than later. But I would actually just prefer them to hold his feet to the fire on principle, not on politics.
Well, even on politics, why not draw a line in the sand here now? I mean, he's already, you know, been elected and confirmed in the Electoral College and all the rest. Ultimately, if they have policy goals in mind, surely he would be a more effective president if there were no chance of lingering conflict of interest questions around him. Why not draw a line in the sand right here?
Well, I would say that this is an issue. If you're thinking about picking a fight with the incoming president of your own party, you got to pick your battles. And the question is this going to be one that rises to the level of something where you're going to have, and this is, again, sort of the political calculus here, where you would have significant public support behind you, or does this come across as just sort of Washington inside baseball? And I'd submit that to a large degree, especially since Trump has made public statements that he's going to divest from his company, that he's going to hand over control, the details about that come across as Washington inside baseball. And I think that the Republicans look at it and say, you know, politically, this isn't the fight to pick right now. And politically, they may very well be right about that. And so asking them to pick that fight now before the president's even taken office just might be a bridge too far politically. So, you know, I want to see him disclose. I want to see transparency. The question is, politically, is this going to be the fight the Republicans want to pick with the incoming president right after his surprising upset win? And I think the answer to that's going to be no.
So far, anyway. Suzanne in Leesburg, Florida. Suzanne, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say that I am a college-educated, employed, registered Republican. And regarding my personal opinion about Trump, I think he's the most disingenuous human being I've ever seen on TV that wasn't actually acting. I think he has surrounded himself with people who will help him do his deal. And I think it's a three-curtain choice. And we may just have, you know, gotten the donkey behind the curtain. I'm very concerned about it and don't want to make light of it. But I don't believe a word he says, that he intends to do anything that's for the best of the American people. I think he's only interested in himself and his cronies. And
Suzanne, we got it. I mean, this conversation to have with fellow Republicans there in your case, I guess, as well. Norman Eisen, if Donald Trump is not fully forthcoming in taking the kind of steps that would satisfy ethics oversight, once he's in office, who's watching the hen house here? Is it Jeff Sessions, who's in his hearing today to be Attorney General? Who watches out for these issues?
Judicial branch, of course, three branches of government in our federal government. The judicial branch will have the opportunity to oversee this because there's going to be massive litigation. You can't just have a president flagrantly violating the Constitution without stimulating court cases. Judges guard their prerogatives. They'll be examining his behavior. The legislative branch will not give up. Senator Warren, Senator Cardin, and others have introduced a bill require presidents to be free of conflicts. There's going to be legislation moving. The Republican majority hangs by a thin thread in the Senate. So that could easily shift when there's the first scandal. Not Jeff Sessions moving to the executive branch. Not Jeff Sessions, but the career public corruption prosecutors at the Department of Justice and the FBI, which has demonstrated a willingness to charge into political thickets.
But they don't. Won't they work for Jeff Sessions at that point?
The career prosecutors are a very independent and ornery bunch. The FBI even more so. They have a tendency to actually enforce the law, not to take the political dictates. So there's been many examples of these career prosecutors proceeding against those in power. In fact, and I hope it doesn't come to this, but the famous Saturday Night Massacre, Nixon had to clear out the Justice Department because they were looking at him. And then two other sources of oversight. And one is the state attorneys general. The states are co-equal sovereigns in our constitutional system. Those AGs are not just going to sit on their hands while Donald Trump and perhaps his cabinet members, his staff, and others flout the law. And ultimately, it all comes down to the American people. And the American people are very mobilized. Donald Trump won less than a majority, less votes than his opponent. He won the election by a handful of votes in three states. And we've seen the people speaking out and reversing Congress, for example, with the Office of Congressional Ethics closure last week. Huge public outcry. Congress backed off. So look for the people to be very active, backing up all of the branches of government.
Well, we'll see what we know. And when we know it, I guess those reports coming in as the hearings proceed this week. A whole lot of hearings for the cabinet. Donald Trump, we heard that tape of him in the lobby of Trump Tower with Chinese billionaire Jack Ma yesterday. Kind of like to know what all's going on. Hope we will in time that it doesn't get in the way. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Russell Berman at The Atlantic. Russell, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
David French at National Review. Thanks for joining us today, David.
Thanks for having me.
And Norman Eisen, Ambassador Norman Eisen, thank you very much for being with us today, Norman.
Thanks, Tom. Great being with you.
Listeners, thanks for all your calls and comments online. As always, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.